Welcome. I'm Linda Feinberg, President of FINRA Dispute Resolution. This neutral workshop will review the major initiatives in our forum for 2013 and address our 2014 initiatives. First, the SEC approved three significant changes in 2013. These involved the definition of public arbitrators, arbitrator selection rules, and the discovery guide. To tell you about these is Margot Hassan, Assistant Chief Counsel for Dispute Resolution. Margot?
Thanks, Linda. I'm going to start with the changes to the public arbitrator definition. In April 2013, the SEC approved amendments to the definition in FINRA's Codes of Arbitration Procedure. The amendments took effect in July 2013 and addressed concerns raised by investor representatives, some of whom suggested that certain public arbitrators should not be classified as public given their background or experience. As you know, the public arbitrator definition refers to affiliations that disqualify a person from serving as a public arbitrator. With the rule amendments, we did two things. First, we added a disqualification, which excludes persons associated with a mutual fund or hedge fund from serving as public arbitrators. And second, we added a two-year cooling-off period for some of the disqualifications in the rule. Well, as a result, some individuals will have to wait 2 years after ending the affiliation that caused their disqualification from the public roster before they can serve as public arbitrators. The affected individuals are investment advisors, professionals whose firms derive substantial revenue from financial industry clients, employees, directors, or officers of an affiliate of an organization engaged in the securities business, and persons with a spouse or an immediate family member who is in one of the affected categories. We are currently working on additional changes to the definition of public and non-public arbitrators, which Linda is going to speak about later in the workshop. I'm now going to turn to the arbitrator selection process. In September 2013, the SEC approved amendments to the customer code to simplify the arbitration panel selection. The amendments took effect in September 2013 for all customer cases being heard by three arbitrators. As a result of the new rule, FINRA no longer requires customers to elect a panel composition method. We now have one panel composition method, which eliminates the need for customers to choose a panel selection method before they get their three lists of arbitrators. So in customer cases being heard by three arbitrators, FINRA sends the parties three lists of arbitrators, 10 chair-qualified public arbitrators, 10 public arbitrators, and 10 non-public arbitrators. The parties can strike up to 4 arbitrators from the chair-qualified public list and up to 4 arbitrators from the public list. However, the parties are permitted to strike any or all of the names on the non-public list. If parties want a non-public arbitrator on the panel, they can limit their strikes on the non-public list and rank the arbitrators in the order of their preference. However, limiting strikes does not guarantee that FINRA will appoint a non-public arbitrator to the panel in every instance. A party who ranks some of the non-public arbitrators may nevertheless have an all-public panel appointed if the other party strikes those arbitrators' names from the list. In cases where both parties agree to include a non-public arbitrator on the panel, the parties can coordinate their rankings, or if they collectively strike all non-public arbitrator names, they can jointly ask FINRA to send a supplemental list of non-public arbitrators. FINRA believes that a simpler approach to panel selection will benefit all the parties and will improve the efficiency of case administration, and this ensures that customers will not miss the opportunity to select an all-public panel because of inexperience in handling FINRA matters, and that all parties in customer cases have an opportunity to see the list of non-public arbitrators and rank or strike any or all of the arbitrators on the list. My last topic is amendments to the discovery guide. In September 2013, the SEC approved FINRA's proposal to amend the discovery guide to provide general guidance on e-discovery issues in product cases. The amendments became effective in December 2013. Specifically, the amendments modify the introduction of the discovery guide to provide arbitrators with guidance on resolving electronic discovery, which is also known as e-discovery, disputes relating to the form for producing electronic documents, and it explains how product cases are different from other customer cases, including a description of the types of documents that parties typically request in product cases. Regarding e-discovery, the amended language requires parties to produce electronically stored information in a reasonably usable format. Reasonably usable format means the format in which the information is ordinarily maintained, or in a converted format that doesn't make it any harder to access or use. For example, an email in its native format, and by native we mean the format in which the document was originally created, is reasonably usable because a party can search it electronically. But if a party converts the email into a hard copy document that someone can't search electronically, then the document might not be reasonably usable. The guide provides factors for arbitrators to consider when they're determining whether a proposed format for production is reasonably usable. And for product cases, the guide explains how these cases differ from other customer cases and explains that the document production lists may not provide all of the documents that parties typically request in product cases. The guide also lists categories of documents that parties typically request. Finally, the revised guide clarifies the circumstances under which a party may request an affirmation when an opposing party does not produce documents that are specified in the guide. Previously, the rule could be misconstrued to provide for affirmations only when none of the documents is produced. The amendments make it clear that a party may request an affirmation when an opposing party makes only a partial production of documents. Overall, the amendments encourage arbitrators to consider the totality of the circumstances, including the costs and burdens of production when resolving discovery disputes. In conjunction with the amendments to the discovery guide, we also revised our online training course on discovery to include additional guidance on e-discovery and product cases. We encourage arbitrators to review again this free online course. The course provides a detailed description of the various formats that parties can produce documents in and explains how a particular format can affect the appearance and searchability, among other things, of a document. It gives concrete examples of the types of production that have been found to be reasonably usable and the types of production that arbitrators might not find acceptable. Finally, the training course provides helpful links to websites that explain e-discovery terms and give additional guidance on the topic. Discovery training is also available in a searchable, printable PDF format on the written materials page of the website.
Thank you, Margo. Next, Ken Andrzejczyk will provide an update on our telephone mediation program for simplified arbitration claims. Ken is our Senior Vice President, Chief Counsel, and Head of our Mediation and Strategy Department. Ken?
So since January 2013, Dispute Resolution has offered parties in simplified arbitration claims the opportunity to participate in telephone mediation for free or at a reduced rate. Under this program, mediators serve on a pro bono basis for cases alleging $25,000 or less in damages, or at a significantly reduced rate, $50 per hour, on claims between $25,000 and $50,000. And we see several key benefits for forum users through this program. One, it opens the mediation alternative to more cases by removing an economic barrier for smaller claims. Two, it reduces geographic challenges for seniors or seriously ill or physically challenged parties who might find attending an in-person mediation especially difficult. And three, it cuts travel and other costs. In addition, the program provides newer mediators with an opportunity to offer mediation services. So as of mid-April, recently, parties have expressed interest in the program in almost 100 cases, nearly 40% of them promissory note matters. We don't always get the parties to agree, and there have been several times when a party has withdrawn its consent after initially agreeing to mediate. However, 23 cases have concluded, with 19 of those settling, and another 15 are currently pending. The settlement rate for these cases is on par with the overall average for all the cases that have been mediated through FINRA's program. So that means the telephonic method has proven to be very effective, and we're pleased to be continuing this program for small claims.
Thank you, Ken. Our next speaker is Jim Schroeder. Jim leads our dispute resolution technology efforts. Jim will give an update concerning important dispute resolution technology initiatives.
Thank you, Linda. For the past 2 years, we've been working on expanding our online presence by building a new self-service secure website. In October of 2012, we launched the first stage of this project for our neutrals that we call the FINRA DR Portal. Then, in June of 2013, we implemented the second half of the DR portal for parties and counsel. In this case, we began the rollout by only including cases involving two large retail firms that agreed to volunteer. However, all of the parties on those cases that are being administered through the DR portal are encouraged to register for the portal because there are a variety of functions that they can use online, including receiving service of the claim, submitting an answer to a received claim, as well as submitting other case documents, viewing case documents, viewing the status of their case, viewing disclosure reports of prospective arbitrators, ranking and striking arbitrator lists, and scheduling hearing dates online. So far, the portals have been very successful, and we're getting lots of great feedback and suggestions for possible enhancements. Here's a few statistics to give you an idea of our progress to date. So far, we've processed over 630 cases and served over 380 claims on respondents through the portal. We've received over 500 documents from parties filed through the portal, including answers, motions, and other correspondence. We've invited over 870 parties to use the portal, with nearly 70% of them registering on a voluntary basis. 74% of the parties on cases using the portal have viewed their arbitrator selection materials online, and we've received over 250 ranking lists through the portal. We've also started sending neutrals that are serving on cases being handled through the portal their case-related documents. Over 80% of those arbitrators so far have used the portal to access their case-related documents online. This is great, and we've been receiving favorable reactions from these neutrals. I hope all of our neutrals will register for the portal to give it a try. There are lots of benefits for using the portal, such as updating your current profile information, viewing and printing your disclosure report, accessing information about your assigned cases, including upcoming hearings and payment information, scheduling hearing dates, and viewing case documents. Registering is particularly important and useful for cases that are being processed through the portal, since the parties on the case are using it. We've been reaching out by letter, phone call, and emails to arbitrators assigned to cases that are being handled through the portal to encourage registration. If you haven't received your invitation and you'd like to register for the portal, please send an email to finradrnm, that's like DR, neutral management, at finra.org. Put the words request portal invitation in the subject line of your email. We'll send you an invitation email containing a personalized link, and you can start the registration process. If you get stuck or you need help registering for the portal, you can call or email neutral management. Just send an email to that same finradrnm@finra.org email address and put the words portal help in the subject line. Or you can call our toll-free number, 855-209-1620. I'll say that again. It's 855-209-1620. Neutral management staff can walk you through the registration process.
Thank you, Jim. What we're doing here is akin to case processing now in all federal courts and in many state court systems. Like the court systems, ultimately, use of the portal will be mandatory for parties and neutrals. Our next speaker is Todd Saltzman, Deputy Director of our Case Administration Department. Todd, what should neutrals and parties know about the shortlist option?
FINRA works very hard to ensure that parties have opportunities to participate in the arbitrator selection process. Sometimes, however, we assign arbitrators whose names are generated randomly by our neutral list selection system. We do this when there are no available arbitrators left on the party's ranking sheets, and we call this process extending the list. Now, attorneys who practice in the forum do express concern about the appointment of arbitrators selected by computer and not by the parties. So in February 2012, we began highlighting parties' ability to avoid the appointment of extended list arbitrators by agreeing to use a shortlist option. Now, if parties agree to use this shortlist option, we'll use our computer system to generate a shortlist of three potential arbitrators. Our staff members will screen the three potential arbitrators to ensure that they are free of conflicts of interest, and more importantly, and also importantly, that they are available on the previously scheduled hearing dates. FINRA sends a shortlist to the parties along with copies of each prospective arbitrator's disclosure report. Each side may strike one name from the list and may then rank all remaining arbitrators' names in order of preference. We then combine each side's list to find the highest-ranked arbitrator replacement. Now, to date, parties in 63% of qualifying cases have used the shortlist option to select a replacement arbitrator. But when the hearing is scheduled within 5 calendar days of an arbitrator's withdrawal or unavailability, the parties can only use a shortlist to select a replacement arbitrator if they agree to postpone a hearing. Now, we found that parties are somewhat less likely to use the shortlist when they need to adjourn the hearing dates to use this option. Parties have agreed to use the shortlist option in 45% of such cases. We are now considering whether a formal rule should be enacted to codify and extend these shortlist procedures.
Thank you, Todd. I will wrap up the 2013 highlights by discussing two other initiatives. our voluntary program for large cases, and FINRA's expanded guidance for arbitrators when considering expungement requests. Then I will discuss four initiatives that will be important in our 2014 year. First, the voluntary program for large cases. In July 2012, FINRA launched a voluntary program for large cases. The program targets cases with damage claims of at least $10 million. However, parties with cases with damage claims lower than $10 million may also elect to participate. The program gives parties in large cases more control by allowing them to customize the administrative process to suit the special needs of their case. Examples include control over the method of arbitrator appointment and the qualifications of arbitrators, use of non-FINRA arbitrators, the opportunity to develop their own processes for party exchange of information, expanded discovery options, such as depositions and interrogatories, and a choice of a wider selection of hearing facilities. Cases administered under the large case program are assigned an experienced case administrator who has been specially trained to manage cases of this nature. The case administrator, together with a senior regional office staff member, holds an early administrative conference with the parties, during which the staff works with the parties to develop a detailed written plan for the administration of the case. In order to be eligible for the large case program, all parties to the dispute must be represented by counsel. Parties who use the large case program pay an administrative fee of $1,000 to FINRA for each separately represented party and may pay additional compensation to arbitrators above the FINRA honorarium. Next, last October, FINRA issued guidance for parties and arbitrators concerning expungement requests. The guidance emphasizes that expungement is an extraordinary remedy that arbitrators should consider recommending only under very limited circumstances. I cannot emphasize enough that arbitrators should recommend expungement only when the information has no meaningful investor protection or regulatory value. This is extremely important because once information is expunged from CRD, it is permanently deleted and no longer available to the investing public, to regulators, or to prospective employers. Then in December, we posted on our website a neutral workshop to provide you with an overview of CRD and broker check. If you haven't listened to it yet, you can still access it on our website. In that workshop, we stress the important role that arbitrators play in safeguarding the integrity of the information in CRD in the expungement process. We also devoted the December 2013 edition of our newsletter, The Neutral Corner, to the topic of expungement. That issue, which is also available on our website, contained an article emphasizing the procedural requirements arbitrators must meet before making an expungement recommendation. The newsletter also contained a separate article in which we discussed the limitations on the types of disclosures that may be expunged from CRD through arbitration. Additionally, to help you apply the updated expungement guidance, we have revised the award information sheet and the hearing procedure scripts. Finally, we revised and enhanced our online training course on expungement to expand on points addressed in our recent guidance. We strongly encourage you to review this free online training course again. It is important that arbitrators understand that they have a unique, distinct role when deciding whether to recommend expungement of information from a broker's CRD record. Given this significant role, arbitrators should ensure that they have all of the information necessary to make an informed and appropriate recommendation. Accordingly, arbitrators should request any documentary or other evidence they believe is relevant to the expungement request, particularly in cases that settle before an evidentiary hearing or in cases where only the requesting party participates in the expungement hearing. Now, having looked back at 2013, let's review some of the forum's initiatives for 2014, the first one of which also addresses expungement. In February, the FINRA board approved a rule change to prohibit firms and brokers from conditioning or seeking to condition settlements of an arbitration with a customer upon the customer's agreement not to consent to or not to oppose the request for expungement. On April 14, we filed the proposed rule with the SEC, and it is now out for public comment. FINRA has long had concerns about whether firms and associated persons are conditioning settlement agreements for the purpose of obtaining expungement relief, and thereby potentially removing from the CRD information that helps protect investors. In 2013, because of FINRA's concerns about the high percentage of expungement recommendations made in connection with settled arbitration claims, FINRA sent to arbitrators and published on its website guidance stating that arbitrators should inquire whether a party conditioned settlement on an agreement not to oppose a request for expungement relief in determining whether to recommend such relief. These concerns extend to any settlements involving customer disputes, not only to those related to arbitration claims. FINRA believes such agreements should be prohibited even if it is the customer who offers not to oppose expungement as part of negotiating a settlement agreement. FINRA also believes that firms and associated persons should be prohibited from otherwise compensating customers in return for the customer's agreement not to expose expungement of customer dispute information from the CRD system. In February, the board also approved a rule change to refine and reorganize the definitions of non-public and public arbitrators. The amendments would require, among other things, that arbitrators be classified as non-public if they were employed in the financial industry at any time and for any period of time. In addition, professionals who represent investors or who represent the financial industry as a significant part of their business would also be classified as non-public. However, they could become public arbitrators after a 5-year cooling-off period. There is one exception. If the person accumulates 15 calendar years of providing the qualifying services over the course of a career, in these cases, the arbitrator would remain classified as non-public. The 15 years are a total number of years. They would not have to be served consecutively. The amendments also would reorganize the definitions to make it easier for arbitrator applicants and parties to determine the correct arbitrator classification. We plan to file these proposed changes with the SEC for public comment shortly. In February of 2014, FINRA filed with the SEC a proposed rule to safeguard parties' confidential information by requiring parties to redact Social Security numbers, taxpayer identification numbers, and financial account numbers in pleadings or other documents that they file with dispute resolution. Under the proposed rule, parties would not be required to redact confidential information in three circumstances: from documents that parties exchange with each other, from documents submitted to the arbitrators at a hearing on the merits, and in cases administered under the simplified arbitration rules. We believe these changes will enhance our efforts to protect parties from identity theft and reduce information security breaches. We anticipate SEC action by the end of May. And last but certainly not least, the board has approved increases in the arbitrator honoraria. We know that arbitrator honoraria paid by FINRA do not fully compensate arbitrators compared to what they would receive in the private sector. We also realize that many arbitrators serve on our roster to provide an important public service. To recognize the important service that you spend and render to our forum, the board approved revisions to our fee structure to raise the honoraria. The proposal should be out for comment this spring. We hope that increasing the arbitrator honoraria will demonstrate the forum's appreciation for your service. We also believe that the increases are needed to recruit and retain a roster of well-qualified arbitrators. Once we implement the rule change, FINRA will pay arbitrators $600 for each hearing day. That is $300 per hearing session, instead of the current rate of $400. That's a 50% increase. The chairperson will receive $125 per day if acting as chairperson at a hearing on the merits, an increase over the current rate of $75. This is an addition to the regular honorarium of $600 per day for a total of $725. Arbitrators who decide simplified arbitration cases or paper cases will receive a flat fee per case of $350. This is an increase from the current $125, a 180% increase. In addition, each arbitrator will receive $250 for deciding contested subpoena requests, an increase by $50 from the current $200. These fee increases will be funded primarily by increasing member processing fees and surcharges. We will also increase filing fees paid by claimants, whether they are investors or broker-dealers, but only in cases with more than $500,000 in controversy, as well as increasing the hearing session fees in those cases. Once the proposal is approved by the SEC, FINRA will announce the effective date of the rule, which will apply to all cases filed on or after that date. The increased honoraria will not apply to cases retroactively. To conclude, I want to thank all of the speakers on our program today, and many thanks to all of our neutrals for taking the time to listen to this workshop and for your dedicated service to our forum. If you have any questions, feel free to email them to us at arbitratorsurveys@finra.org. Again, that's arbitratorsurveys@finra.org. Again, thank you for listening.